Jokic behind his back. What a take by Jokic.
That's your sitter. Wow.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am your host, Zach Mikosh with DenverStiffs.com. You are listening to Nothing But Net Radio on the Dash Radio Network. It is 4 o'clock here in Denver on a bit of a gloomy day. Fall has officially arrived here in the Mile High City. And if you have not figured it out, the next hour on Nothing But Net is all about the Denver Nuggets. Joining me today, we do have one co-host. It is Denver Stiffs writer Ryan Blackburn. He is not in gloomy Denver. He is out in South Carolina. Not sure if it's sunny or not out there, Ryan.
Yeah, it's looking pretty sunny through the curtains right now. If you can't tell in my voice, Zach, I'm a little bit under the weather, so I haven't actually seen the light of day for a while. So I'm going to do my best to power through this.
We appreciate it. I was a little bit under the weather maybe 2 weeks ago. When I had Mike Olson on, and we actually had to stop at one moment because I was literally unable to speak anymore. My voice was pretty much shot. Had to at least get a glass of water, and then had to power through about like the last 20 minutes, sounding like I'd been smoking Marlboro Reds for the past 30 years. So it was
as deep as Mike's voice, that's for sure.
Exactly.
You guys yours the same, is the same level.
Yours is perfect, Brian. Yours has a rich timber to it now. That's all that's going on there. So,
glad to hear it.
We are, of course, not a podcast about various voice and voice acting. So we will get off that subject and let's roll through what we're going to talk about here on the Nuggets. It's officially preseason. We are in full swing. Last time we talked last week, we were previewing of the Lakers game right before it was about to happen. Nuggets have now actually played the Lakers twice. They have also played the Perth Wildcats and now go back out on the road to play two more preseason games to finish it up. Who did they got? They got, what, the Clippers and then is it like the Bulls or something?
The
like
Bulls.
That?
Yeah.
So, Ryan, I guess let's start with those Lakers games. It feels almost ages ago when they actually played them, but I thought, you know, it was very interesting in those first two games. In the first game, you had Juancho Hernangómez showing out. He was shooting lights out in that game. And then in the second game, you had Malik Beasley. Well, really all preseason long, but particularly in the second half of that second game, Malik Beasley shot very well. Pretty much was the nail in the coffin for that second game. What are your thoughts on their big performances?
Well, it's exciting to know that at least occasionally Denver will have some bench talent that will show out in some big games and potentially give the Nuggets a boost when their regular rotation isn't necessarily performing up to snuff. I'm really looking forward to seeing which of those two guys kind of fills in that last spot in the rotation. I think with everybody healthy, I'd see Monty Morris, assuming, well, just for a second, that Isaiah Thomas isn't healthy. Monty Morris, Torrey Craig, Trey Lyles, Mason Plumlee, I think those guys are all pretty much penciled into the rotation at this point, but there's a fifth spot open right now, and I think that Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez are currently fighting for it, and in my opinion, whoever kind of shoots better, whoever performs defensively better, I think one of those two guys is going to win that permanent rotation spot. So regardless of who wins, I think it's definitely encouraging to see both guys performing well.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right there. It's so impossible to tell how many guys Coach Malone's going to go with in his rotation because he changes it fairly often, about maybe once every 2 months or so. At least last season, I remember there was one point they were up playing like 11. Then they were playing like 7. You know, finally, you kind of found that happy medium around 9 or 10. So you kind of feel like that's where he'll be, and whether he plays 9 or whether he plays 10 really is just going to be a matter of whether or not he trusts the 10th guy out there on the court. It's, I don't think at any point in his tenure with the Nuggets, or is when Wancho and Malik have been here specifically, I don't think coach has ever been like, ah, you know, these guys are really good, but I just can't find minutes for him. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's been a matter of he said this, that, you know, specifically with Malik, it's a matter of him showing consistency and being day in, day out, that kind of playing within himself player that we've seen Malik do in this preseason. Frankly, he talked about that last night after the game against Perth, is how much he's just kind of, you know, he's just trying to stay within himself, play defense, and shoot consistently. And if he can do that, then I think coach goes to a 10-man rotation regardless and finds minutes for him or for Wancho. It's because it's the same story for Wancho if he can do the same thing. Right now, I'd probably say Malik is kind of in the leader in the clubhouse, wouldn't you? I mean, Wancho had that big first game, but then he's kind of been so-so since then, whereas Malik has been, like, I mean, he's been consistent 3 games in a row.
Yeah, for Wancho, I wouldn't even put it at so-so. I would definitely say he's been subpar in the other 2 games. While Malik has, I mean, what more can you say about his shooting performances at this point? They're consistent across the board. I would definitely say he's the leader in the clubhouse for sure. He provides a little bit more athleticism and speed on the perimeter, and he kind of matches up as maybe a third guard in a backcourt off the bench a little bit better than Wancho, who operates more as a forward off the bench and maybe even more of a power forward at that. It'll be interesting to see who wins it. I'm definitely thinking that Malik's in the driver's seat, though, as you said. It would be big for the Nuggets this season if they had a 10th guy step up. And even if that 9th and 10th guy, I'd say Torrey Craig and Malik Beasley, like, we're looking at Gary Harris and Will Barton as probably the 2 primary minutes leaders on this team right now, even ahead of Nikola Jokic, simply because there aren't great backups behind them. I know that we'll talk about Mason Plumlee in just a little bit, but if Torrey Craig and Malik Beasley don't really step up, and to a lesser extent Wancho, we're looking at Gary Harris and Will Barton being heavily relied on for heavy minutes. And that's not a great recipe for success if this team wants to go very far.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I mean, Will led the team in minutes last season. I don't think there's any reason to believe that he won't do that again this season. And Gary Harris is a guy that, you're right, if they don't get something out of those 2 guys, out of Craig and Beasley, then they're going to have to lean on Gary Harris, because he's, you know, Torrey Craig provides so much in terms of perimeter defense off your bench. And I mean, he's basically, they're molding him into becoming Gary Harris light, is exactly what they want Torrey Craig to do. So if he can't do that effectively, obviously he's not going to ever be as good as Gary. I shouldn't say ever, there's always that possibility, but he's obviously not as good as Gary right now. And so you would, you know, if you can just get him, though, good enough to the point where he can do some of the same things that Gary can do at a consistent level, close to what Gary can do, then that's what you need out of him. And if you don't get it, you're absolutely right. Right. And there's nobody else to turn to, especially if Malik's not playing well either, because that's it. Those are your only really 2 guards. And even then, I mean, they're especially Torrey is going to be more of a combo wing. With only those 2 guys, if they can't do it, there's nobody else to turn to for them. The Nuggets have, I mean, then you're stretching into guys like Devon Akun-Purcell, right? Then you're hoping you have another Torrey Craig kind of scenario, which that kind of seems like they almost caught lightning in a bottle there, so I don't think they should rely on that. But I don't know. I think though, through 2 games, I mean, and Torrey, he's been up and down. He's been fine. He's been solid on D. His shot really hasn't been falling. And we'd heard so much in media day specifically. Both those Coach Malone and Tim Connelly talked quite a bit about Torrey Craig and his shot and how much it improved. So you have to think that's going to come back. I'm not too worried about either of those guys, especially with Malik showing. And so you're right. if you can get what we're seeing in this preseason out of Malik, if you can get that in the regular season, then that's a big boost. That's a big boost for the team. Another big boost, as you kind of quickly mentioned there, was Mason Plumlee. I think, you know, specifically in that second game, it was kind of funny. I was talking with my boss at the what I do actually do to make money in this world, but he was asking me about the Nuggets game, and you know, he was like, oh, so they win. Then he was talking about the second game. He was like, did they actually win that game? And I was like, yeah, they did. And I was like, it doesn't really count. I said, because you know, it was kind of they were down by 18 in the third quarter, and then they came back, and it because all the backups were in, and it basically suddenly it looked like Mason Plumlee was back at Duke, and you know, just dominating some poor Division II team in a preseason. In a preseason college basketball game. But the thing that I thought was really nice to see just about Mason, and I think we've seen so far through this preseason as well, is he looks healthy, right? He looks like he's back up to full speed. With that in mind, Ryan, I mean, and with how he's been playing, how do the Nuggets find time for Mason, along with, of course, finding enough minutes for Nikola?
You know, it's going to be interesting, especially with Trey Lyles, really, exceeding expectations at this point, and right. Paul Millsap being as a heavy minutes guy at the four anyway. I don't know if they have a massive need to increase his minutes load at all. I think the ideal role for Mason on this team at this point is to sit in that 15 to 20 minute per game range, based off of how well the starters are performing, based off of the matchups with opposing teams. If Paul Millsap gets ejected like he did yesterday against Perth, then he can definitely slide up a position and work with Jokic that way. But at this point, I don't think the thing with Mason Plumlee that maximizes his ability is, if he can go 15 to 20 minutes and play extremely hard, set as many screens as possible, roll to the rim and get above the rim on lob attempts, and that's where he's most effective. If he has to conserve energy and kind of weather the storm throughout the game, then that's where you start running into some more problems, where his athleticism just isn't maximized as much. And he's in great shape, don't get me wrong, but when you're talking about a guy with his skill set who's a very high energy, high effort guy, you want to maximize that skill set as much as possible by limiting their minutes, in my opinion, similar to a Kenneth Faried type. So I would keep Mason's minutes at around where he is right now, maybe increase it or decrease it and fluctuate at just as he's playing well or not well. If he keeps playing well, then hey, you continue increasing. And if he's one of those high plus minus guys, then you get him on the floor more. But if that's not what happens, then I think you're sitting right at the 15 to 20 minute mark nightly.
Yeah, that's I think that's probably ideal spot for him. It's just the interesting thing, of course, is the other dilemma of playing Mason and Jokic together. It's almost, if Mason continues to play well, that it almost forces your hand there, because you know you want to give Jokic probably around 35 minutes a game, you would think. Now, whether or not Jokic physically is going to be able to handle that load, we'll see, especially over a full season. The Nuggets have never asked him to play that many minutes before, but that's, you talk about a guy who's your star player, he should be playing around 35 minutes a game. Then there's only 13 minutes left at the center spot in the rest of the game, right? So that's where that almost forces your hand to be like, okay, we're going to have to play Mason and Nikola next to each other, even if it's just for one shift. It's going to have to happen. I know, Brent, I mean, I don't know where you stand on that whole thing. I think there's potential there still. I think the problems last year were related a lot to just Jokic kind of not wanting to be assertive when Mason was in there, because Mason kind of had to occupy the space where Jokic would normally like to operate. I think there's maybe an adjustment the Nuggets have to do and do work on some other things, you know, maybe some DHOs and stuff like that that are away from the lane but Jokic still excels at, and try and work that pairing together. And then the other thing is you brought up is you know, Kenneth Faried, he actually was a guy, I mean, when you think about him, his skill set, not all that different from Mace's. I'd almost say, you know, obviously I think Mace actually has the better skill set, but he has those same kind of skills, like you mentioned, as Kenneth Faried does. Faried played really, really well with Jokic, because he had the ability to at least pull the defense out, you know, 15 feet away from the cup. He had that mid-range jumper that they at least had to respect, and that kind of gave him some of that short ball gravity, I guess, I think is what that might be, like an Adam Mattes term. Mace has got to do that. Maybe he's got to work with Mark Price or whatever he's got to do. He's got to develop a mid-range jumper. Nothing too crazy, but he's got to develop something that he can at least hit at around a 40-45% clip, so that the defense at least has to somewhat respect it and can't just simply collapse down in the lane like they do right now. What I mean, Ryan, do you think, am I crazy, or can they make Jokic Plumlee work?
No, I actually disagree with you there. I don't think that Mace's role needs to involve spacing from a mid-range jumper. That's just my opinion. What he needs to do is maximize the athleticism that he has by using his agility and using his ability to get into the lane really quickly while still being outside of it when the defense sees him. What Kenneth Faried really did well was he baited the defense with his positioning into leaving Faried, and then Faried would immediately crash the offensive glass or receive a dump off or jump into the middle of the lane at the right time. What Mason is really struggling with right now, in my opinion, is finding that right balance of jumping into the middle of the lane versus getting out of the way. A lot of the times you'll see, especially on the bench unit, where Mason's really he really kind of tries to assert himself as a focal point, is he'll use a duck in, and he's at the short corner, and instead of kind of taking his time, letting the offense develop and then receiving a dump off pass if he's open, he'll duck into the middle of the lane. I don't necessarily agree with that, because it clogs up the lane and prevents the rest of the team from driving. So when he's on the floor with Jokic, when he's on the floor with other starters like Will Barton and Jamal Murray and guys that like to get to the rim if they can, the best thing to do is just free up that lane, and then if his man rotates to try and block an offensive player, then following that player, receiving a dump-off pass, receiving an alley-oop, and throwing it down reverse, because that's just what he does, and that's what he's really proven, that it's an elite offensive play, and it's an elite offensive weapon to have in Denver's landscape, because they don't have a guy that can really go up above the rim, unlike Mace. So it's I don't know if it's necessary for him to have a mid-range jumper, because, I mean, as we've seen analytically, that's not necessarily the best shot in the game to have. And if the team is, if he's settling for mid-range jumpers at around a 40% clip, then that's still an 80 offensive rating when he gets it. So it's that's not a great number, and I would definitely advise for him to continue dunking as much as possible, cut out the shots from 3 to 10 feet, and especially when you're with Jokic, just maximize the gifts that you have and play above the rim.
Fair enough. That was a solid argument for not making Mason Plumlee learn how to shoot a basketball.
It's just, the problem is that we're trying to turn him into a free throw shooter at this point, and through three games, like he had a great first performance, but his last two games have not been stellar at all. If he can't get above 60% from the free throw line, then why are we expecting him to shoot above 40% from mid range? Like, it just doesn't seem like the best use of his talents, in my opinion.
That's fair. That is a good point. I just think basketball players should be able to shoot a basketball, Ryan. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
All right, so we've already spent 15 minutes talking about these two Lakers games, and we have not even mentioned LeBron James, of course, in his first two games. So obviously, anybody listening to the show knows I don't like talking about the Lakers, but we'll do it. We'll do it here for just a moment. So LeBron, obviously, his first two games, he in a Laker uniform, he played, I don't know, maybe about like 20 minutes a game in each of them. What were your impressions so far? I guess when you look at the thing I want to get to here, Ryan, is now when you look at this team. Now we've seen them with LeBron for two games, and a couple more actually, because what they played Sacramento last night. Do they look like a team who can challenge for the playoffs in the Western Conference?
Well, they look like a team that can challenge, but I don't see them necessarily going anywhere once they do. It's going to be a real issue for them for 82 games to maximize that big man position. Right now they have JaVale McGee playing the five and Kyle Kuzma playing the backup five and with their regular rotation, and that's just not a recipe for success against the teams that when like Denver, for example. Denver stayed big against them, won both games, and really proved that if they go to Nikola Jokic consistently, then there's nobody on the Lakers that can actually defend him. And teams like Minnesota, even with Karl-Anthony Towns, you'll have Rudy Gobert playing above the rim against them.
Memphis.
Against Utah. Memphis with Marc Gasol, Steven Adams in OKC. There are a lot of great centers in the Western Conference right now, and I just don't see the Lakers lasting 82 games against them. They may make the playoffs off the back of LeBron James and just being able to play as fast as possible, but their ceiling beyond that is really low. And anybody who tells you that their ceiling is a three seed is delusional, in my opinion, because like if at least with this personnel, because they just do not have the horses to compete with some of these teams and to compete with them for 82 games, in my opinion.
Right, I mean, so a three seed ceiling for the Lakers. I think that's if they roll Yahtzee, I guess, and Lonzo Ball comes out and looks like an all star, and Brandon Ingram is winning Most Improved Player of the Year award, and you know, Kyle Kuzma is becoming a 20 point per game scorer off the bench, and is their sixth man of the year candidate, and LeBron James is winning an MVP, and JaVale McGee is giving them a good strong 20 or so minutes every night, and it's working. And you know, I mean, you have to stack up so many different things that have to go right for them in order for that to be sort of a feasible scenario, and so it just doesn't. Their ceiling is the three seed in the sense that my ceiling for income this year is winning the lottery, but this is probably should not plan on such a thing, you know. So
my biggest issue right now is like when you talk about running out JaVale McGee, the Golden State Warriors ran out JaVale McGee, Zaza Pachulia, Jordan Bell, guys like that, even Kevon Looney and players like that. But the reason they could do that is they had two MVPs on their roster, the defensive mm-hmm. player of the year, who just happens to be a freaking like wild card on offense with his passing and his rebounding, and then the second best shooter of all time on top of that. Like, there's a reason why they were able to continue to be awesome with a terrible center, but the Lakers have one MVP, and then they have a point guard right now who shot 35% from the field in Lonzo Ball, and they have Brandon Ingram, who's, well, I mean, he's, I guess he's kind of like Kevin Durant in the sense that he's long and lanky, but other than that, like, that comparison right. really dries up. So you're talking about two very, very different teams, in my opinion, and the Lakers just don't have the backups to really make that work. Like, they were running Michael Beasley at the 5-2, and like that just doesn't make sense to me.
It was very interesting. You know what doesn't make sense to me is why they're not playing Zubats, because I think he actually is. I mean, he's looked for a backup center. He looks perfectly fine. I mean, he looks like he could handle that position well. He's been giving them some rim protection over these past few games. I'm kind of got a soft spot for Zubats in general. Can I wish the I wish he'd come be on the Nuggets, but I thought he's looked well for them, and it's interesting that, you know, because like you said, they don't have a ton in the way of, I mean, because what else? I mean, who else are they going to go with? Moritz Wagner, or I can't even remember who the other center is that's on that roster. Nobody too impressive. That's it. All right, it is.
That's really it. Like it's JaVale McGee, it's Ivica Zubac, it's Moritz Wagner, and that's it.
And Wagner's I believe he's hurt still with some sort of knee injury.
Yeah, he's got some sort of knee contusion that he's had since summer league. Like this team does not have a good option at center. And like their best option at center is probably LeBron James, in all honesty.
What?
But if you're asking LeBron to play 82 games as the nominal five, then you're asking for trouble, and you're asking him to opt out for a trade. Or you'll be trading like Lonzo Ball for a five at some point, and that's just not something that they're gonna want to do. But lots of stresses there.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be interesting to see. I do think that, I mean, obviously LeBron still looks fantastic. So they're gonna have some success just because of that. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that it's something that's I think they'll like you said, they'll challenge for the playoffs, whether or not they make it. I mean, that'll just depend on health of themselves and some other teams and kind of how some things shake out that we maybe aren't thinking about right now, but definitely not a three seed. All right, I want to move on to the game last night against Perth, which they win, but they lose, right? Like you beat the Perth Wildcats. There was a time in the third quarter you were up by 1 point. I mean, like that game was far, far too close than it should ever have been, especially considering that team just got beat by like 50 points against the Utah Jazz. That's what you're supposed to do against the Perth Wildcats. And that's no knock on the Perth Wildcats. It's just that one team is in the NBL and one team is in the NBA, and there's a difference. And last night, at least in my opinion, the starters, they didn't look like they were wanting to make that difference an actual thing. They seemed to be like, NBL, okay, we'll play at an NBL level. And it was, to me, it was very blatant that the starters just, they knew who they were playing, and so they played the game like that. And while it's a preseason game, and it was the Perth Wildcats, so whatever, it's indicative, I think, of a bigger issue with that group, which is they themselves talked about this at Media Day. Last year, they played down to their competition. They said, you know, we didn't have a problem with the teams who were in the playoffs and playing those guys. We had a problem against the teams who were in the lottery, who we just didn't come out and take care of business. You saw that last night against a team that had no business even being on the same court as them, and they basically got outplayed by the other team's starters. So, I mean, Ryan, what do you think? Is this something to be concerned about with this starting group, that they're still – maybe they haven't quite grown up yet and they're still going to be playing down to their competition?
Well, I definitely think you said that their starters might have gotten outplayed, but the Nuggets starters definitely were outplayed. Paul Millsap was a plus one, Nikola Jokic minus one, Jamal Murray minus two, Will Barton minus four, Gary Harris minus one. Like, that's – It's a really discouraging game last night from the fact that, like, this starting unit was supposed to is supposed to, because it's not like they haven't, but this, like, we have to obviously put this in perspective that it's still a game against Perth that does not count,
right?
But there was very little urgency, there was very little desire to get up and down the floor and make the most of everything that was going on. And I want to, I think it all starts with Jokic. Nikola Jokic needs to be the leader on this team, whether he wants to or not. There's a lot of expectations on his shoulders. And for the third time in the preseason, he has not led the Nuggets in shot attempts.
Right.
In my opinion, that's a big After playing against JaVale McGee and Kyle Kuzma in the first two games, and then the Perth Wildcats tonight, that's my biggest concern. And we'll definitely talk about that more, but this team will feed off of Jokic being good. Because Jokic has to be good, and so far he has not been a top 20 player, in my opinion. And you can just go through last night's stat line to prove it. 3 points, 1 of 5 shooting in 22 minutes, 3 assists, 3 turnovers. He had 7 rebounds, which is good, 2 steals, which is good, 4 personal fouls, which is not good. There was a lot of, and by the way, he went 1 of 4 from the free throw line. Some of that may be his finger, but in my opinion, it all comes down to he has to be a leader, and the Nuggets right. will follow his example. He's clearly the best player, and he did not play like it yesterday.
Right. No, and you know what? I thought you brought up the most interesting stat, or the most telltale stat, or the most concerning stat from the ones you brought up is the 4 personal fouls, because it was like throwback Jokic to bad Jokic, right? There was a lot of, there were silly fouls in that group of four, and frustration fouls, frustration with the refs, and you know, maybe that was somewhat warranted. There were some inexperienced refs out there. We know the Perth Wildcats are a physical team, comes from a physical league. They're not gonna out athletic or out. I don't even know how to say this word, but out athleticize or whatever you want to say. They're not more athletic.
Out-jump you.
They're not gonna out jump the Nuggets. They're not going to out fundamental the Nuggets. They only got one option, which is they're gonna have to beat up the Nuggets. You had to know that going in. That was the way they were gonna play. And Jokic he let it work. They absolutely got to him. They got him frustrated. He made those silly fouls that you had plagued him in his career early on, and it ended up being a game where they neutralized him. Not by really anything they did physically on the court, other than the fact that they were physical, but it was they neutralized him mentally by getting under his skin. And that, as you say, he's got to be the leader of the team. If they start getting under his skin, they're going to start to get under everyone's skin, because his teammates are going to see that he's starting to get frustrated, and then that's going to make the rest of them they're gonna maybe either be frustrated, or they're gonna be concerned, or whatever it is. They're gonna start playing tighter. You know, you can't have that. You gotta have your best player remain calm and cool, and especially in a situation when you had to know going in that this was exactly what was gonna happen. But like you guys, or like we said, it is just one game,
The one basket that he had yesterday was a fluke basket too. Like if you remember, it was on after Perth had rebounded the basketball, Will Barton came up with a steal, passed it to Jokic, and he laid it up with his left hand, not his right hand, by the way. He was on the left side of the basket, so I mean, whatever. But he's having trouble using that right hand with the finger issue that he's been dealing with since media day. That's a concern. 0-for-4 in basically half court and other non-fluke settings, and he's just not getting down to the block like he has in his last couple of years. It's a really discouraging factor, because that's where he needs to operate, at the top of the key and at the right block, in my opinion. And those are the two spots where he's really going to maximize his impact on the game. Because Denver's offense, he's the fulcrum. Everybody cuts around him, and
right.
Perth didn't have a guy to defend him yesterday. He just let them kind of go at him, and he kind of took himself out of the game. So that can't happen. That's what I'm looking forward to for the next couple of games and going into the regular season. Can he take shots? If he doesn't take shots, then the Nuggets are going to lose.
Right, that's as simple as that. All right, tell you what, there were some there were some good things that happened. Ryan is getting me sick through the phone here. There were some good things that happened in that Perth game. I want to talk about that before we move on from it. So what we will do is we will go ahead, we'll hit a break right now, and then we'll come back. I want to talk about the positives from the game and one player in particular. So stick around, and we'll be right back. been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate. And he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work. All right, everybody, welcome back into the Pickaxe Pundit Show. Zach Mikosh, Ryan Blackburn, we're from DenverStiffs.com. We spent the first half of our show talking about the Nuggets' first two games against the Los Angeles Lakers. And then we kind of got into the bad side of a win, ironically enough, but a win against the Perth Wildcats, and where the Nuggets, for large portions, looked uninspired. They of course, do get the victory. They'll be on the backs of their bench, and I think the guy on the bench who looked the best last night was Monty Morris, right? That was probably the best we've ever seen him play. Now, again, you consider who he was playing against, but 9 assists, 2 turnovers. I mean, just the way he handled the offense. It's one of the things we talked about Mason Plumlee earlier. I think it's one of the reasons also that we, you know, obviously Mason's healthy and that's a big portion of it right now. But I think another big reason Mason Plumlee is looking so good, as well, is because he's playing with a real point guard for the first time. I mean, it's since really forever, because even when the Nuggets had Jameer Nelson, if you think about it, Jameer started pretty much for the most portion of his career here in Denver. So, I mean, especially even by the time Mace got here. So I don't know that in Mason's time in Denver, he's ever actually played with a point guard like Monty Morris. You probably have to go back to when he was in Portland and playing with Damian Lillard, the last time he was playing with more of a guy who actually could run the offense. Because, you know, I mean, let's be honest, for the most part, if you were playing on the bench with the Nuggets, you were either Will Barton was playing point guard, or it was Emmanuel Mudiay. Neither one of those guys is particularly good at running an offense. They can both be effective one-on-one guys, but neither one of them, for differing reasons, was really able to maximize what Mace did. Monty does that. I mean, Trey Lyles is looking really good, right? If you think about it, Torrey Craig has had lots of open looks. Wancho, we talked about, has had a good game. Malik Beasley has been knocking down everything, right? I mean, how much of all that bench improvement is actually because they're playing with Monty Morris?
I think a lot of it, and as you see from the plus minus last night, Monty Morris led the team in plus minus with a plus 17. In his 26 minutes, and that's really encouraging. When you see that number, you see what he's doing with his assists and his facilitation. He's being efficient. It's a really encouraging stat, in my opinion. His effect on the game has just been massive. When you can give the ball to him and he knows what to do with it, the 2 turnovers are encouraging. He's kept the turnovers down throughout the preseason, and he's given the Nuggets a lot to be excited about, despite the fact that Isaiah Thomas is going to be out for the foreseeable future. I'm really looking forward to what Monty Morris does, and he's not going to be Damian Lillard for Mason Plumlee, but he is going to be a decent facilitator, even an above-average facilitator in the NBA. As the 9 assists and 2 turnovers last night can see, he just makes the right decision. He maximizes what he can do, and really from a backup point guard, that's all you can ask for.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's, you, again, what the Nuggets have been missing is you want a guy that when he comes in and he's off your bench and he's supposed to be running your bench unit, just, you know, take care of the basketball. Don't take poor shots. You know, get good looks. If you hit them, you hit them. If you miss them, you miss them. Play good defense, and you'll be fine. That's all they want. Well, when you had a guy like Emmanuel Mudiay, you had a guy who didn't take care of the basketball. That was his primary reason. It wasn't a great defender, though, either. So you really had a guy who just wasn't giving them what they needed out of that backup point guard position. And in Will Barton's case, just a guy who didn't, when he was put into that role, didn't create very good looks for himself or for others. He kind of got caught into a situation where, you know, he was clearly the threat on offense, and the opposition knew that, and they were going to force him to try and make a play for someone else, and Will's not very good at that, and so then it was, you know, we got bad Will Barton, the part that nobody likes. So having that guy in Monty, who, I mean, that's exactly what he does. That's how he's built, is just kind of being this consistent, you know, doesn't try and do too much, but make sure above all else takes care of the basketball. If he can do that, and again, we do have to take into account, yes, he had 9 assists, 2 turnovers, he looked great. We do have to take into account that it was against an NBL team. I mean, we've seen Monty Morris, he did very well in the G League last year. So we know at that level he can play. But it's, though he had the big night against Perth, he played very well against the Lakers in both games as well. I mean, he has been consistently now through 3 games a guy who has looked like, yes, he can play rotation minutes. Ryan, let's throw this out there. Let's say that Monty Morris plays and he plays very well. Do you have any concern that when Isaiah Thomas comes back, they would have difficulty finding both of those guys' minutes?
No, because I would have a minor concern because Michael Malone will prioritize defense in all likelihood over getting Monty Morris minutes. But what I would do with both of them is if Monty Morris is your best backup guard outside of Isaiah Thomas when he comes back, if he's better than either Torrey Craig or Malik Beasley, then I think you go with a 2-point guard bench. Simply because you want as many guys who can find Trey Lyles, find Mason Plumlee, find Malik Beasley, find Torrey Craig in the offense as you can. Morris has proven that his outside shot is at least reliable enough to say, hey, look, I can take this shot and I'm not going to worry about it. And I'm not going to worry about necessarily being an inefficient scorer from out there. In the second game of the preseason, let me pull it up right now. He started that game and he was 2 of 5 from the 3-point line. Not necessarily elite, but that's 40%. That's gonna do it. That's gonna be good enough. So I think that with Isaiah Thomas, he can function as more of a scorer. Monty Morris can function as a facilitator, and you're talking about a lot of dynamic lineups. Given that Denver has a lot of combo guards in their starting lineup, if they have 2 point guards off the bench, it leads to some creative lineups that they could create from a mix and match standpoint, where you can play Monty Morris with the starters, or play Isaiah Thomas and play Gary Harris with the bench, or lineups like that, where you can just get really creative and have as many offensive weapons on the floor as possible.
Right. Yeah. I think you're 100% right. I think if he continues to play like this, you have to find him minutes one way or another, just because he's shown that he can be effective. And you're right. I mean, if you've got what you want to have as many guys with the ball in their hands, especially on your bench, there are guys that can be effective with the ball in their hands and be effective for others. And we also know, look, not everybody's going to stay healthy. I mean, Isaiah Thomas might get healthy, but what if Jamal Murray, Jamal Murray's kind of an Iron Man, but, you know, what if he has to go down for a few games or something, or what if Gary Harris gets nicked up, or Malik or Torrey? I mean, there's going to be injuries that come along. So even just knowing you have Monty in your back pocket, I mean, it's a big bonus for the Nuggets. going into the season. It's something that I think they, as long as he continues to play this way, they'll find a way to keep him involved. All right, so we have I want to spend the last segment of the show. Let's go ahead and look forward towards what we've got coming up this week. We've got, of course, the final two games against the Los Angeles Clippers and the Chicago Bulls. Ryan, the Nuggets, of course, could run the table, beat both the Clippers and the Bulls, and go undefeated. Would you take anything in would you read in anything into that? Would you take anything away from winning all their preseason games, or is it just exhibition games, doesn't matter?
Well, on one hand, you want to say no, just because, it, again, like you said, preseason doesn't matter for the regular season. But what I would say as a minor takeaway from that is that the bench usually for Denver is a negative. Usually when the starters come out, usually when Nikola Jokic comes out, the bench is what kind of brings that lead that Denver accumulates back to even, or actually puts them at a disadvantage in most games. If that's not exactly what's happening in the preseason, the bench is getting the most run at this point. The starters are definitely getting minutes, but the bench is having a lot of minutes accumulate, and they're consistently performing at a plus minus of the, at a positive plus minus against the Lakers, against Perth. The Clippers are a different story. They're a much more competent bench with a lot more competent players, where you'll see Montrezl Harrell, Boban Marjanovic. They have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander running their bench, and Lou Williams, of course. Like, how could you forget him? They have a lot of guys who would definitely impact the bench. And in Chicago, too, they have Bobby Portis. They'll have Denzel Valentine in all likelihood. Lots of Wendell Carter. Lots of talented players there. So if Denver continues to perform well in these next two preseason games, I'll have a lot more confidence in running the bench lineup in the regular season. That's not something I would have expected Michael Malone to do unless the bench proved that he could do that.
Right. Yeah, that's I think you're spot on there. It's, well, I'll say this, if if the bench continues to have to take the reins, and if we see that in the next two games, we see these starters tend to struggle and the bench come bring them back. I mean, it's good because, like you said, you'll see a bench unit that maybe the Nuggets can lean on and can actually try to get ahead of opponents and or come back on opponents with, whereas up until this point, their entire, at least through pretty much the entire Michael Malone era, is, or at least certainly through the entire Nikola Jokic era, is when they go to that bench unit, I mean, they just fall apart, right? They've been, last year especially, they were awful when they had to go to the bench, and a lot of that had to do with Will Barton playing 41 games as a starter, and not having him coming off your bench. That's, of course, now that's a full-time thing now. So if you can simultaneously make Will Barton a starter and still also improve the bench to the point where they're a strength instead of a weakness, that's huge for the Nuggets. On the other hand, if that's how they win these next two games, then you kind of are concerned because you're looking at the starting group who now two games in a row, that second game against the Lakers and against Perth, they have been pretty poor in their performance. And so if that continues, well, now you're going into the opening night, and you're kind of got some questions around, hey, how is the starting unit gelling? Are they going to be actually able to figure this thing out, or are we going to have some early bumps because for whatever reason these guys don't seem to be able to be playing that well? I coach brought it up last night, you know, in the postgame conference after Perth, was TJ McBride actually asked them this question, but he asked them, you know, hey, do you think this game was a wake up call for your starters? And coach said, man, I've been woken up since April 11th, which of course, if you guys remember, that's the game day that the Nuggets were eliminated. And then that was it. And so that was all he said. If these guys can't get it going, you know, then I don't know. That would be the biggest concern for me, is if these guys come into this season and they're still having these bumps because they're not, you know, they're not taking the game seriously enough, or they're not coming out with energy, whatever you want to call it, whatever we want to say the reason for that is, if they are still doing that same thing that we saw all last year, then man, it's concerning, because that's really, in my opinion, the only thing that's holding them back.
Well, I think I'm going to pump the brakes on that a little bit. I think we've been very negative up to this point just because it's a little bit fresh in our minds. But the Nuggets just played against the Perth Wildcats. They didn't play against the Golden State Warriors or even the Atlanta Hawks. They played against the Perth Wildcats. And they will lose that game against Atlanta if they perform in that regard. But I don't think that we can definitely use it as a cause for concern, but we cannot blame them until they're actually losing those games, if they do ever lose those games, those types right. of games. Have to give them the benefit of the doubt, in my opinion. The starters were bad, and I think the starters will be the first to tell you that the starters were bad, in my opinion. That's not the expectation that they have going into the year. When you're Jokic is taking 5 shots total and Millsap has been as inefficient as I have ever seen him, those are definitely causes for concern. But this was against Perth. The Nuggets are hungry. Jamal Murray is hungry. Gary Harris is hungry. Nikola Jokic is hungry, in my opinion. Everything that we've heard, everything that Denver has projected, is that this has been a really good offseason, and this has been a really good media day, training camp, first couple of preseason games. This is the first bump in the road, man. They'll have bumps in the road throughout the season, and it's how they respond to it that really matters. Like they'll have that random game against Atlanta where they suck and things just go horribly wrong. You know who also has that? The Golden State Warriors.
That's right, when they play the Nuggets.
I like to think of our the Nuggets a little bit in the higher regard than Atlanta at the moment, but in my opinion, like
2 years ago, like, though, when they got ran out of the gym, when you think about that,
yeah,
that
no, was kind it's, of it's it is it's exactly the same thing. The Nuggets they're going to be fine. Don't use a game against the Perth Wildcats as a forecasting for what the Nuggets are going to do over an 82 game regular season. The starters have played like basically 20 minutes together, and that's it. And until they play more time and show just exactly what they have, then I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Last year, this lineup was awesome. And I think that they're right. going to be awesome. They just need to get back into the right mind frame.
All right. Real quick, Ryan, because we're getting a little bit tight on time. What player are you looking for? Still, which player has the most approved still left with these last two games?
Which player has the most approved? Honestly, I'm going to say Paul Millsap. And people are going to be surprised, because that's a 33-year-old veteran. That's somebody who you wouldn't necessarily expect to be the first guy to have to prove something. But thus far, he has not performed well. He has been really bad. He went 1-for-5 in the game on September 30th against the Lakers, 1-for-5 in the next game, 2-for-7 in this past game, and then got ejected because he was getting frustrated. That's an issue. That the Nuggets cannot have that this year. They need to be able to rely on Millsap for 30 minutes a night of excellent defense and then being an efficient fifth option. They cannot have him be they cannot have those 1-for-5 nights often. They can come occasionally, especially when Murray and Harris and Barton and Jokic are putting up 80 combined points. But I don't know, man. This could be a sign of decline. It could also be a sign of, hey, we're taking the preseason too seriously. So I'll be looking forward to seeing if he turns it around in the next couple of games. I don't expect the starters to play in the last game against Chicago, but I do expect them to come out and play hard against the Clippers next week.
Right, yeah. Well, and we know another thing Coach said is that he's going to try and play – He wants to see the starters haven't had a chance to play in the fourth quarter yet. They didn't do that against Perth either, so you would expect against the Clippers that the starters will actually play fairly lengthy minutes. So that's a good one. For me, the guy, it's Wancho. He played that first game, and he was shooting lights out. He did everything right, and you were like, man, this is awesome. And then he hasn't been up to snuff since. So he's got his chance. Meanwhile, Malik Beasley, of course, has been very consistent across three games. So Wancho's got to show something in these last two games, show some consistency, show that he can, you know, okay, he's had one good game, two bad games. He needs to have two good games to show it's probably more good than bad. That's I guess in five games, that's as best as you could hope from him. But just to see that kind of consistency out of him, because, you know, I don't think what we saw on that first game against the Lakers is necessarily an aberration. I mean, we saw it against that. We talked a little bit about that Warriors game 2 years ago. We saw it then. That was really the first time we saw it in all of his rookie season. I mean, granted, it was a small sample size, but he shot 40% from three. We all know that he can shoot it. He's got to be able to do that, though, in game situations, and he's got to be able to be consistent. He's got to be able to play solid defense, especially given the fact that he's going to play have an opportunity to play on a small forward where he should have a significant size advantage and wingspan advantage, which could help him contain penetration from the perimeter. He's got to – I don't know. I mean, to me, I wrote about this – maybe a month or two ago, about, you know, how this season is particularly important for Malik Beasley and Wancho Hernangómez, just because they're third year first round draft picks who have yet to be able to crack the rotation. This is if you go back and look at it, this is kind of the make or break year for these guys, and they either A, end up playing well and then making minutes and being a full-time player the following season and getting an extension, or B, they don't fall out the rotation and then they end up, what happens to them is the same thing that happens to Emmanuel Mudiay. They get traded, and then you have basically one shot with a brand new team to try and make it happen, and that's what they'll be in the same spot that Mudiay is right now, where he's basically got this one season in New York to show out, or it's probably gonna be tough to find work in the NBA. That's where I think Malik and Wancho are both at, and with Malik showing that he's been consistent and Wancho not. Wancho is going to have to shore that up here in these last two games, or he could be in danger. Because as we saw last year, if you fall out of the rotation, you might not get back in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Injuries will happen. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing. Like, you never want to root for an injury at this point, because this Nuggets team, at full strength, they can be really good. But my guess is that at some point somebody's going to get injured, and somebody on the bench is going to need to step up. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one of the guys that's in the regular rotation. It could be a Wancho. It could be even a Tyler Lydon. It could be a Devon Akin-Purcell. Somebody who you're not necessarily expecting to be that guy could eventually be that guy. So with Wancho, I hope that he gets back to a 40% three-point shooting, man, because it is really pretty to watch. He deserves an opportunity, in my opinion, to show that is real.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, we are out of time here on the Pickaxe Pundit Show. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. I'm at Zach Mikosh. Ryan is at NBA Blackburn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I always second guess myself on that one, and I don't know why. We're also at Denver Stiffs, at NBN-Radio. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at The Denver Stiffs. Also over on Facebook, give us a follow and give us a like there. If anybody's still on Facebook, I don't even know anymore.
Man, we've got a YouTube, man.
And we have a YouTube, yes. Make sure you're going and checking us out on our YouTube channel and subscribing there as well. All kinds of videos are already being posted. You guys basically will get every – if you want every video of every press conference, post-game, pre-game, Denver Stiffs YouTube channel. That's where you can find them all. So, also, if you guys are listening to the podcast version of this, we kindly thank you and hope you would leave us a rating there and subscribe as well. All righty, Ryan. Thank you, sir, as always.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
All right, everybody. We will talk to you next week.